the restaurant industry and the day-to-day and what's happening. Disruption happens and it bites back and it's really hard. But the discipline pays off and brands have shown that.
Hey everyone, what's going on? My name is DJ and this is the Restaurant Growth Podcast presented by Seven Shifts. On this show, we sit down with the best minds in the hospitality business to bring you new insights and big ideas to help your restaurant grow. Brandon Poole joins us on the show this week. Brandon spent his career building national restaurant brands and now is using what he learned to help businesses do the same with his new venture, Brand Gabs. On this episode, we chat about the value in creating a brand for your restaurant that can drive decisions, create competitive advantage, and foster what Brandon calls a grounded certainty for your business. As always, I'd love to hear from you. My inbox is open, dj@7shifts.com. And with that, here's Brandon. Hey, Brandon, how are you today?
Dominic, doing great. How are you? Great to be here. Appreciate you inviting me.
Absolutely. I'm doing well. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
No problem. Glad to be here.
Awesome. Well, so Brandon Poole, founder of Brand Gabs, if you want to just introduce yourself to our audience and tell us how you got started in this restaurant business.
Well, I'm a lifer, like a lot of people that are listening and lots of folks that have been contributing to this and on the podcast. I listen to it a lot. I think it's great what you're doing.
Thank you.
I think I would have loved to have had this, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. You know, to be able to help out with some of the work that we were doing and some of the challenges we had. I think this has been a great product of the pandemic that we've had, you know, these forums for great content. So kudos to you first. And I'm really happy to be on here.
Thank you.
Like I said, I'm a lifer. I started, almost 30 years ago now and like working in bars on the most frontline grunt work that you could imagine. And eventually doing what we all did, began serving, bartending, and, you know, kind of started fiddling around with marketing and branding back then. It was fascinating me. I was going to school for it. So this kind of convergence of learning about branding, marketing principles, and seeing it happen on a frontline basis at, you know, these great, you know, owner-driven, you know, very, you know, kind of mom and pop type bars was really fun. And so I used to, you know, just step up and chat with the owners and get involved and engaged in, you know, with the customers, ran events, did a lot of one-to-one selling, getting out there, asking people to come in, doing fun stuff in the bar. So really it's like in terms of grassroots, it's where it really, it started for me. And that kind of, you know, snowballed into working, you know, with national brands and eventually kind of culminated in, you know, a brand leadership role working with a QSR brand for over 7 years. And that's where a lot of this came up with Brand Gabs and evolving the approach to kind of brand building.
So that was like kind of the more formative experience you've had. And that was at Pita Pit?
Yeah. So Pita Pit, I mean, I don't know how much you want to get into the, you know, the stories about the brands. You know, I had personal relationships with the guys. One of my first management jobs was actually managing the 10th, I think it was 10th or 11th location in Canada. It was a Canadian brand. So it started in 1995. So I was there at the outset. So I knew them pretty well, but, you know, stepping away, I worked with a large national brand for almost 10 years in casual dining. Did a lot of work there in marketing, branding, franchise sales, promotion. So I kind of came back, worked with these guys and, you know, pretty much, you know, in terms of vision and in terms of being really driven by their, you know, their mindset, their values, and their real belief in their product. Just a great, great brand of nothing but good things to say about them. Where we weren't when I arrived, not probably measuring up, was in kind of, you know, really creating a national brand that people could buy into.
Yep.
So we really evolved in terms of a formative work there. I talked about this in an article that I just wrote in my experience about learning on the go and on the fly and also trying to apply things to establish ourselves in a very busy QSR market. You know, a formative experience there was understanding that, you know, with a very, very small marketing budget, we need to take on the big guys and had an opportunity to do something with our brand that was pretty special. If we just thought a little bit differently, we had the team to do it and we had a great franchisee group and we had a bit of success doing it over the course of about 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was really a great experience in terms of evolving towards this idea that branding and brand building could be a little bit different, and that was worth sharing with the bigger audience.
Absolutely. And we don't have to go super deep into it because I know we have a lot to cover today. But what were some of those things that you did with Pita Pit that helped kind of build that from a a local brand to a national brand?
Well, I mean, I think that the first thing we really did is, and I'll get into a little bit of this in terms of evolving brand gaps and working with agencies and things like that and how that worked. But what we really focused on without, when we knew we couldn't really tackle big marketing budgets, media budgets, and do a lot of things the way that the industry had had operated and continues to, with large awareness spends, large promotional spends, drive the door, brand be damned kind of thing. That's still to this day, we couldn't afford it, so we had to do something a little bit different. And we really focused on who we were and creating this idea of involving our most engaged stakeholders to understand who we were and define who we were, and really become very focused on talking about that. So we worked on our brand promise. We became very, very deliberate about sharing that and involving stakeholders like our franchisees and customers in that. We gave our franchisees tools at the local level to be able to develop their own kind of sub brands doing that as well. And then we became incredibly focused on frequency of visits as a traffic driver, rather than one time drop a promotion, drive a coupon through the door. And we became more focused on loyalty. We were one of the first QSR brands in Canada to really have an established loyalty program. So that's how we kind of took it on. We had some great results. We worked in neighborhoods, we worked in communities, and we did a lot to try to invite people to very intentionally believe in the things we believed in and kind of join a club almost. And so we ended up with a strong base of really, really highly loyal customers, which, to be truthful, were there before that loved the brand, but gave them a reason to continue to engage with us more intentionally and more formally. And that, over the course of 4 or 5 years, really, really helped us create that base and taught me a lot moving forward about, maybe there's a different way.
Yeah, absolutely. And looking at the people that are already loyal and just making them more incentivized to come in. And then I guess in turn, and then we'll get into this. I know this is part of the agenda for today, but they evangelize you and then they tell more people to come in, and it's that kind of beautiful cycle. So to get there, something you talk a lot about in your articles and on social media is something called grounded certainty. So tell me what that is.
Well, I mean, it's a lot. I mean, I guess the best way to talk about it is it's an opportunity, and in food service and restaurants, it's a missed opportunity. I think that, brand, and it's happening now. I commented to this recently, involved myself in a discussion. I try not to name names. I try not to criticize. I've been part of brand teams. I know there's a hell of a lot of work that goes into them. And so I try not to openly criticize, but I like to question and bring up a dialogue. And still you're seeing, big headlines, rebranded, X company rebrands. And what does it end up being? It ends up being a new logo and probably just a launch campaign, right? And I'm not, again, I'm not trying to be critical. Some of these are very, very good. And in the short term, they will engage and connect with customers. They're very media driven, things like that. But again, it's like everyone look at our new, how we look. It's really a re-visualization of the visual elements of your brand, typically without much follow-up. And again, I know that brand teams are stretched. I know, and marketing teams, I know they have to do something. And I'm not going to say that in restaurants there's no strategy. There is. It's just that what I'm learning about, and really what pushed me towards thinking about my brand building venture and offering a little bit differently, was just that in this, what we've learned, and I really was hoping we wouldn't talk about what we've learned from the pandemic today, Doc, DJ. But what it is I've just found across industries, and I don't just work with restaurants, I work across industries on brand building, and I've had some great conversations. And what I learned is that the brand can be something bigger. It can actually create a foundation of thinking and belief in yourself that you can use, and you and your brand leaders and brands alike can use to drive forward with some momentum to create a foundation for business building not just a brand to create marketing. That is the biggest opportunity miss. So grounded certainty is taking a situation where brands and brand leaders, particularly in this case in the restaurant industry, that happens all the time, are massively disrupted. There's question marks to the path forward. There's disruption, there's ambiguity, in some cases there's chaos. Can the brand play a bigger role as being that, let's stop, let's have something that we know is ours. Nobody can take this away from us. We did the work. This is how we're going to communicate with each other, with this foundation of growth. And from there, just being very intentional with it, it's not just about, and your business will grow. What we do, and grounded certainty is a big part of Brand Gabs, is we take that and say, well, there's variables that you need to work with in your business, and there's outcomes that you need. So we're talking about it's sustainable growth, making your internal culture more engaging and engaged in what you're doing, and creating permanent competitive differentiation. So it's not just words. Grounded certainty is an opportunity and a belief in that a brand can be much more, and it can be a foundation for very specific and intentional business success.
I think core values are maybe a little bit smaller than a grounded certainty. That's like really the core, of who you are. And I think in the industry now, we don't have to talk about the pandemic, right? What's new is gas prices are up, right? I wrote a little bit about this in our newsletter. And that does impact restaurants in a lot of different ways. People are less likely to go out to eat. Deliveries are going to be more expensive, both with third party, delivery of food, and then the food that's coming to you to cook. And then someone like a food truck is really struggling right now too, wondering, how far is it worth to go? So then grounded certainty is that kind of thing you're looking back on and saying, well, this is how we're dealing with the situation because we know who we are. It's almost like a defense against all the different, like you said, chaos that happens in this industry. So what are some ways we can look at grounded certainty? What are some examples in action of that in the restaurant industry?
Yeah, good question. Well, and I think we talked about it. I think unfortunately what we're seeing is the opposite. There's confronted with so much to do.
Yeah,
many, many restaurant brands, and this stretches way back before the pandemic, I think make choices based on just, what can we do right now to solve the problem that's in front of us, as opposed to pulling back and trusting that that can be revealed. What you should be doing should be revealed when everyone gets together and talks about what would this brand do? Because we are who we are, what would we do to confront this? And this opens up a broader spectrum and broader thinking to say, let's not just look tunnel vision to see how some brands do this. We're special. We know who we are. We've done this work. We know people expect this from the restaurant industry. What can we do to be unexpected, to really drive home and create that path toward becoming a much more, grounded brand?
Yeah.
And having results that drive business success. So specifically, I'll walk you through just a very quick part of the process where we take grounded certainty as the basis of Brand Gabs. I mean, it all starts, the first point and the most important point is establishing a brand promise. And a brand promise sounds very textbooky. It sounds, a little bit kind of, I'm sure there's people rolling their eyes. But to me, a promise when taken seriously is a very intentional thing and a very important thing, particularly when you're dealing with in-tuned, involved, and engaged stakeholders, both your internal teams and customers. It's about believability, and you have to believe in yourself first.
Right.
So with that, you really have to understand the problem, to understand the problem you're solving. It's not about, okay, we are here because we think the world deserves the best sandwich. That's not a problem to solve. That's something that you want to believe in, that is important about you and significant about you.
Right.
Bigger, pull back, understand the problem you're solving. Start that as the conversation. But once you know that, it creates a whole new context for decision making. Then you start to drill down and think about your customers and your stakeholders and your business. What type of engagement in that problem solving can create an emotional connection with the people that matter most? Not just make them loyal, but continue to believe in you in a way that they're going to be connected to you beyond something that's just a product. And then third, you have to really develop a culture of exceeding expectations. And in restaurants, this is key. I mean, how many times have I been involved in conversations about frontline customer service or customer engagement? Sure, this is in training manuals. This is HR teams. This is marketing teams. This is ops teams. this is laminates up in a kitchen. This is, this is training. This is what restaurants do very well. But it's not meaningful enough unless you can say our culture, where we'll support you, everybody on the front lines and beyond, to do things that exceed people's expectations. That's vitally, vitally important. And there's brands that do that really well. So I guess I answer your question, DJ. That's how it starts, being really, really good and intentional about starting that brand promise, and then making it like almost like a pledge. Like, we're promising this. And when you break a promise, things happen. So really allowing everybody, giving people the freedom to explore what that brand promise means to them.
When you break that promise, people leave your restaurant, like in terms of the people that work there, and then people stop coming in because they're disappointed and they're gonna go find someone else.
Correct.
So how do you, is there a difference? Do you see that there's a big difference between, once you kind of find that problem and you say this is, the thing that we want to develop and this is our promise. Is there a big difference in how you express that to the people that work in the restaurant as well as the people that are coming in to eat?
There isn't. I mean, tactically, there's ways to express it differently, but you don't change what it is. I mean, I just use an example of some of our most successful campaigns that we ran. When we really drilled down and said, "What's that?" Got to the point of the brand promise and came up with this kind of one thing, which I've talked about before. Of okay, this is all the work that you've done in your brand promise. Drill it down to one thing that we can continue to revisit and share. And kind of have in our pocket when we are here, either having doubts, being challenged, or need to talk about who we are and what we're doing. That doesn't change. When we got to that point, our best campaign was one we did in the new year, 1 year, and we invited at the same time both of our all of our internal teams and all of our customers to participate in defining that point to them. It was called Refuse to Settle. Spoiler alert. And so it became about. Not about here's a tagline, put it on a shirt, although it was there, of course. I'm a marketing guy, of course I put it on
Yeah, of
shirts.
course, pens and cups and
But it wasn't it wasn't intentionally a tagline that we forced into kind of the marketing verse and the restaurant universe as this is the tagline that we're running for this month's campaign. We invited people to define it for themselves and therefore associate with us and talk to us about it. This is what we believe in. We want you to tell us why this matters to you. And this is relevance, right? This creates relevance with really, really important people, your most engaged team members and your most engaged customers, and creates the opportunity to build and create their own identities inside of that. So we just invited people to talk about it and rewarded them. And it was just organic. We didn't push out any, paid social media channels. But how people responded is at the beginning of the year, and they said, this year I'm going to refuse to settle. I'm going to make my life a little bit different. And every once in a while, they'd talk about how our food would help that because we have a health-oriented product. But it wasn't always that. It was things like, I'm going to this year I'm not going to let people treat me the way they've always treated me. Like it got very to the point when we would talk about it, we would become emotional ourselves because we felt like we were a part of their life. There was no way those people were going to detach themselves from our brand once they knew that what they felt was important and that what was important to us was important to them. So that was a huge, huge point of success for us. And it's what we're trying to do is develop that kind of shared magic with all of your stakeholders with the work we're doing at BrandGap.
I think the important thing from that story that you mentioned is that coming up with these things is not going to happen from one person. Maybe it's the owner of the business, director of marketing, director of culture. It's not an edict from one person. It's going to be coming up, like when you say stakeholders, having your employees and your customers all considered stakeholders, which I think is a great way of phrasing it. Get what you need from them, and they're going to tell you what it is. And it's really up to you to just distill it into kind of one thing and one promise.
Could have said it better myself. Yeah, I mean, the biggest challenge too is, the restaurant industry bites back at you. When you have success with that, well, business happens and our leadership team, bless them, they're hardworking guys that got and girls that got to where they were being incredibly successful by working their butts off and trusting in what they loved about the brand. So to get an entire leadership team who everybody was looking to leadership to go, let's pull back here and really understand what this means, what our brand promise is very difficult. A lot to ask really, really busy, you know, committed, passionate people.
Yeah.
And, you know, we did that well at sometimes, well, sometimes, and we did it poorly sometimes. And it was no one's fault. It was just, it's a, you know, like I said, the restaurant industry and the day to day and what's happening, disruption happens and it bites back and it's really hard. But the discipline pays off and brands have shown that.
Absolutely. And would you recommend if a restaurateur or a restaurant owner is kind of feeling like maybe they don't have that grounded certainty, they don't have that solid promise, tactically, would you what would you recommend they do to start to find that? Would it just be to kind of gather, like you said, their stakeholders together and start to formulate from there?
It is, yeah, I believe it is. That's what you have to do. You have to, first of all, recognize that you are in a place where you're going backwards. And most brands have been, and most brands are, and that's really difficult. Not because there's a tremendous amount of ego in this industry, although there is, but there's pride. There's pride, and there's people that get it, and they're very, you know, all of us that have been in those roles as marketing executives, you know, feel very attached to the front line. And so it's really difficult to say, let's pull back from the stuff that's made us, the hard work that's being done on the front line, and try to understand how we can build something that's better, build something that makes us, that's going to help these people on the front lines in the long run much more, in a much more meaningful way than just trying to grind out and put out fires and solve things that are being thrown at us the way that we've always thought. So you really have to take the people that, you know, that are the decision makers, the influencers in the organization, and pull them aside, remove yourself from the day-to-day and say, here's what we're doing. Let's talk about the, let's first of all have a blank whiteboard and talk about the problem we're solving. You know, that's where we start it when we're talking to brands. And, you know, I talk about the power of brand gabs and the stuff that we missed. And I missed a lot of the time when I was working with agencies who were very brilliant, gave us lots of good ideas. But where we've tried to be different with brand gabs is we've tried to really have three things that we offer with this that most, you know, brand building concepts don't. Insights, no matter what we do, no matter how long the engagement is, you will get insights. You'll understand what that problem is. You'll understand the things that emotionally connect you to your stakeholders. And we will give you some ideas, at least baseline ideas about exceeding expectations. The next is time. You know, agencies, as their business model, they need to justify and their own business models. So it's a lot about, you know, spending dollars. Let's get an engagement. Let's get, you know, let's be your agency of record. Let's get a retainer in there. We create this model, this brand gaps model from in a 1 hour session or a 12 month session and anywhere in between. And that just depends custom to what they need. And then outcome. And the outcome is, you know, we're going to promise you that no matter what it is, you'll feel a little more grounded after we talked. You may not apply this. You may not work with us ever again. You may not ask us to help you, but I guarantee you'll come out of this with your eyebrow raised and something to share with your team that gets you a little bit closer to feeling like you have something special that's going to create that foundation for going forward.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, the last part here I want to get into is a little bit this MVC pyramid that you call it, the most valuable customer. So or I put MCV in here, but anyway. that grounded certainty, that brand promise, once you know what that is, then you can start to kind of, that really helps drive your business. And like you mentioned earlier, focusing on the customers that are already loyal. So just, dive into that a little bit, explain what the most valuable customer pyramid is, and kind of how grounded certainty influences that and what the benefits of that for your business would be.
Yeah, we'll do. So yeah, like you said, I mean, I think one of the things that we think about with brand gaps and think of any great brand organization, because, you know, we're enthusiasts, brand enthusiasts, as much as we are brand experts. We love, you know, it just comes down to really looking at the example. We worked with a great agency that really showed us this kind of benchmarking of what great brands do. So, I mean, you know, we really like to use, you know, think of brand examples and what other brands do.
Yeah.
In their marketing, with MVC marketing, you know, I think with the restaurant industry, it's always, I used to call it eyes and buys.
Okay.
People are very interested, brands and through media and through social media and just through old habits. It's about buying eyes and buying buys, meaning driving, spending money on promotion, spending money on awareness. There's never anything in between. Mm-hmm. And what this becomes is really kind of driving an imaginary top of the funnel If you create this old thinking that if you create this massive kind of pyramid, at the base of your pyramid is all of these new customers. It's this new customer that everybody wants. What we learned in what it went in my past is that, and it was out of necessity, saying that we can't go after awareness and promotion. We don't have the media budget to support it. What we learned, and especially when we got our loyalty program, and it's really why loyalty has a place, I think is the most important reason why loyalty and rewards programs have a place in this industry, is that not every customer is built the same. Mm. When you think of, and I didn't create this concept about lifetime customer value and customer acquisition cost, but the most valuable customers, very simply, are the ones that are cost the least to acquire, mm-hmm. and end up being that long-term customer that continue to deliver value to you. When we started our loyalty campaign, we didn't have the funds to really, like, in a paid way, go after driving acquisition. What we focused on is, as we continue to build it organically, we focused on ways to drive upward advocacy to create high loyalty customers. Very simply, those high loyalty, those mega loyalty segments, which are typically smaller in most cases, are the ones that really drive that long-term customer value. So all this MVC pyramid did was, your most valuable customers are the ones that are this mix of low acquisition costs, high long-term customer value. Instead of having that as the tip of your pyramid and, you know, really working with this small group of customers and driving in value and loyalty through that, why don't we flip it and find a way to do our marketing a little bit smarter? Think less about acquisition, although you have to acquire. I'm not saying you don't need acquisition. Mm-hmm. But what would happen if we, at every step of this pyramid, of engagement, drove upward advocacy to create an inverted pyramid where this wide base is at the top? You have a wide base of your most engaged customers who we already know spend the most, mm-hmm. visit the most, and share the things they love about you. If we invert that and kind of just switch our thinking, change our resourcing around into delivering, number one, value to this group to make them more engaged, and do things from an upward advocacy perspective for when you get a customer, when you acquire a loyalty customer or any customer, inside of your culture, you're doing things tactically and strategically to draw, to create that kind of upward advocacy, making them more loyal at every step. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess really focusing more on the people that are already a little bit more inclined, the people that love you and that believe in that brand promise, and then kind of delivering a better experience for them in turn, and then they'll help bring new people in. It makes that acquisition, I believe, a little bit easier, because then it becomes word of mouth, which is effectively, you know, the best form of advertising, because it doesn't cost you a penny.
Proven. Yeah.
So I guess, like, tactically, what are maybe a couple ways that you found success in able to build that, you know, reach that kind of broad pool of loyal customers? And then who do you look to? Who in the market's doing that really well right now that people should be looking up to?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a different, it certainly is a different playbook. You know, I think that one thing that we do with our clients, and kind of what we did in the stages of when I was working, you know, leading a brand, is that we understood that if you start with the outcome as being increased sales, it forces you into bad decision making. Mm. You veer off the path. You start to forget about the things you need to be doing to really facilitate this upward advocacy and think about rewarding that upward base that's going to grow your business. So instead, we built outcomes around what we called business building attributes, customer engagement attributes, which we knew we could influence with the great tactical work we were doing on, through social media and whatever. So there's really four of these kind of variables that I think people need to focus on about moving these, rather than thinking about driving sales as the outcome. That's a truism. We all want higher sales.
Right.
But if you pull that back strategically and think about really improving and increasing your relevance with your most valuable customers, what can you do? And there's so many tools now, particularly through social media, to just create bonds that are stronger and do things, not reactionary, but kind of talking, you know, really leading with that problem that you're solving and that emotional connection part of that brand promise to create relevance. If you can drive relevance and continue to measure and grow how relevant you are to your most valuable customers, sales will come. There's no way that's going to reverse sales. Second would be affinity. And affinity is that when I talk about upward advocacy, it's the high end of loyalty. It's hyper loyalty. It's people seeing things in you that they feel are important to them. That's affinity. So driving affinity, driving the upward highest segment of hyper loyalty. Number three is intent. And intent is just simply that kind of exceeding expectations part that we talked about.
Right.
If you have someone that's made a purchase or is in a position to make a purchase, what are you doing to influence them to make another purchase, even at the point of purchase and in your post-purchase experience? Driving intent. And then obviously, you know, this seems maybe a little bit pie in the sky to people if we don't talk about something that's really important, which is conversion. And conversion is that fourth variable. Driving conversion doesn't just mean about clicks and turning clicks into buys. It means about creating a completely seamless experience at all points in a customer journey for them to make a decision to engage with you or buy something from you. You can't have waste there. You can't have a point where somebody is reading something about you or reading an article or listening to you or seeing your tweets or whatever, and you don't have something there that's not telling them necessarily to buy, but giving them the opportunity to take it to the next level, take the engagement to the next level. Maybe they purchase something from you. Maybe they're looking forward to your next follow. Heck, maybe they like to hear you on the podcast, DJ, and they want to So we'll be talking conversion for brand dads on this after.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, and then I guess none of that is really possible if you don't know who you are. You don't have, like we mentioned a few times, that grounded certainty. And I think that's really the key to figuring it out and creating that cycle, both for your customers and then for the people that work for you too, which I believe having that will also help a lot with retention. And it kind of works, I think, in the same way where, you know, you have loyal people that want to work for you, that are happy to work for you, focusing on them, and then they'll stay for a long time and bring more people in. Thank you. But with that, just to end things, where can people find you if they want to work with you and I want to work with Brand Gaps?
Yeah, really simple. You know, I have a very simple website to follow, brandgaps.com.
Cool.
Super simple. Where you can just see, you know, essentially what the process is, stuff we talked about here, and how we do that in a team setting.
Okay.
Like I said, it's an hour long, it's a day long, it's a month long, it's a year long. We just find that to custom. But like I said, we focus on outcomes.
Cool.
And then Brandon at brandgabs.com. There's a lot of brand in there. It wasn't intentional. I had this name before I did this, I promise. I love hearing from anybody that
awesome.
Has some feedback on what we do or wants to carry the conversation, thinks this might help.
Awesome. Yeah. And then definitely go, everyone go follow Brandon on LinkedIn. He posts a lot about, what we talked about today. It was a great follow, as well. But with that, Brandon, thank you for coming on today.
Awesome. Thanks, DJ. Really great. I had a great time.
Awesome. Thanks.
Thanks again for checking out the Restaurant Growth Podcast. We're glad to have you as a listener. For more great content from 7shifts, check out our website and blog, 7shifts.com/blog. You can also hit us on all of the social media platforms at 7shifts. Thanks.